The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Again, we're with you today until 6:30. That's when we will step aside for Lady Vol basketball as tonight, senior night for Tennessee, as the Lady Vols take on Ole Miss. It's time now for Brent Hubbs' weekly visit. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. And if you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Kind of you, I guess, yesterday to, hey, I got a little time. Who wants to talk some ball? What seemed to be right there at front of mind for the first folks that fired some questions your way?
Well, I mean, obviously people are wanting to know about this basketball team and their struggles and wanting to know a little recruiting, because that's always on everybody's mind. But you're a little over a week away, week and a half away from the start of spring practice. And, you know, what does this team look like? You know, what's the changes going to look like with the new coaches and all those things like that? So, yeah, I had a little time yesterday afternoon and decided to jump in there and let's knock out a few questions for about 45 minutes or so. Those are always fun to do, just kind of the impromptu chats, if you will, and some good stuff, some good you know, good questions on all three sports, you know, and a little some baseball talk too, because man, they're playing well right now. Fun to watch.
They certainly are. Calendar changes from February to March over the weekend, and so coaches going to be back out.
Coaches are not. They could go out at different points this spring for evaluations. The big thing is you can have kids on your campus starting on Sunday. And there is a 7-on-7 tournament taking place up in Gatlinburg this weekend at the Rocky Top complex up there. So I think there's a chance you might see some guys roll back through on Sunday before they head back to their respective destinations. And we'll see. The weather's not going to be great this weekend from a temperature standpoint. That might limit some of the 7-on-7 teams. We'll have to wait and see what the final roster looks like. But you're going to start to hear and see of prospects being on campus starting on Sunday, because it's the first day they can be. And then Tennessee is trying to get a good number of prospects in a week from this coming Saturday in conjunction with the Auburn basketball game, a little bit of a junior day there. Looks like it's going to have a North Carolina feel for it. Big defensive lineman Peyton Page tweeting out today that he's coming in next weekend, which is a big deal because he's got to get to know Jimmy Brumball and start to work a relationship there. But big deal for Jay Graham to get him on campus, because a lot of people have felt like Clemson was the heavy front runner for him. The longer that one goes, probably the better it is for Tennessee's sake. He's like Tennessee, but getting him on campus and getting him around Coach Brumball, I think, is a big deal.
Tennessee still maintaining contact with Zach Evans?
Yes, they are. The question's going to be, where is Zach Evans going in the month of March? He's got one official visit left. It's tentatively set to Florida on March the 20th. I think that's probably what he will do. If he changes his mind and visits Oregon, it wouldn't shock me, or Southern Cal, it wouldn't shock me. I think he'll take a fifth visit. I don't think he'll just not take a visit. Florida seems to be the school that he's talked about the most visiting, and it's set up there tentatively for that visit. So everybody's watching that on March the 20th, and then we'll see where it goes after that. But, yes, Tennessee has remained in contact with Zach Evans. He's still communicating with Ole Miss, from what I understand, as well as Florida. And, again, a couple other schools are trying to get him on campus for a visit as well.
Brent, do you think that with the coaching changes at Tennessee, the four new ones on staff, do you think that Jeremy Pruitt sacrificed a little bit of on-field coaching for better recruiting?
You know, I mean, I don't think he did when it comes to Jimmy Brumball. I don't think he did when it comes to Jay Graham, because those guys, to me, are proven assistant coaches on the field, given their resume. Obviously, Shelton Felton is a young coach who's not proven. I would also argue that he's not proven as a recruiter yet either, Jimmy. He's been in homes for... Well, I mean, he got a chance to be in on the road for a couple of weeks when he was at Tennessee as a quality control guy, because there was an opening on the staff when Tyson Helton left, and then he was on the road for a year recruiting for Akron. And so what kind of success did he have recruiting for Akron in a year? So, I mean, I think when you take a young guy like that and give him a chance, I think you're taking, you know, compared to Chris Rump's resume to Shelton Felton, sure, yeah, there's risk involved there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then Joe Ossovat's a guy who is a little bit different because he's been in your program since he's been here. So he knows your system. He knows what you want to do. He's worked closely with Jim Chaney. So he knows how you want to coach and how you want to go about business on the field and on the practice field. And he's been in all your game plan meetings. So, I mean, that's an elevation deal. The difference for him is he can now be on the road recruiting. And we're seeing some early returns with him in terms of getting some guys on campus and some prospects talking about him that way. So I'm going to be curious to see how what kind of recruiting success he had. Now, David Johnson, who he technically replaced, had a really good year, his second year. First year was okay on the recruiting trail. Really good year this past year. So, you know, is there a trade-off? Is there some questions? Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you take a guy like Rump, who's got the resume and the history of the SEC that he has, and you compare it to Shelton Felton's resume, there's a vast difference there. I will say this. I don't think Chris Rump was the most productive recruiter for Tennessee while he was here either. So I don't know that he lived up to the resume that he had from the time that he was at Tennessee as well. So, you know, I'm not ready to hot take it one way or the other, Jimmy. I don't think that – I think when you look at Jay Graham and you look at Jimmy Brumbaugh, you got two seasoned veteran coaches that you brought in, and then you're taking, quote, a chance with two younger guys who are really getting their first opportunities.
Let's get a call from Jason. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jason.
Hello, yeah. Hi. Hey, yeah, I just had a question. This was pertaining to Ryan Tannehill, the Tennessee Titans, and Tom Brady, the rumors with him possibly going to the Titans. And I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on that, on Tom Brady possibly going to Tennessee. You know, just looking at some of his numbers over the last 3 years, from 39 to 42, he's got 13,000 passing yards, 85 touchdowns, and an average passer rating of 95. And, I mean, compare that to Tannehill's numbers with kind of the same type of talent on offense that Tannehill had in Miami, really. You know, what do you think about that? And I'll go ahead and hang up.
All right, Jason, sure do appreciate it. I do believe that if indeed, and Brent, there's been a lot of speculation, if he indeed explores the free agency process, I think the Titans would be an attractive potential landing spot simply for what they have to work with him. I mean, Derrick Henry in the backfield, you look at a good young receiving core, especially with a 1,000-yard receiver his first year in the NFL. So I just think that it would be an attractive spot. Now, I don't know if it would be the most attractive spot, but personally, I do think that for the Titans, the fact that they were able to make the run that they did with Tannehill, I just think if I were John Robinson, my inclination would be that unless Brady calls me, I would be trying to work something out with Tannehill just to keep the ball rolling from last year to this year.
Well, I think it's an interesting dilemma that the Titans are in a couple spots. One, what are they going to do with Derrick Henry?
Right.
Okay. I mean, you know, that one on the surface that would seem like a no-brainer, right, that you would do that. But how many years does he have left in the tank? I mean, the guy's got a ton of carries on his body, and he plays a physical style. So how many years has he got left? Where do you want to make your investment there? Ryan Tannehill's 31, 32 years old, something like that. You know, if you're comparing him to Tom Brady, there's really no comparison other than Tom Brady's nearly 10 years older. Okay. So how much longer does Brady want to go? I mean, Ryan Tannehill was brought in to be the backup last year. Now it turns out he got hot and played really well and had a great run. And I like everything that he did. I just don't know if you're John Robinson and you think your window to winning is right now, And Tom Brady wants to come, do you pass on that opportunity? But you know, are you sitting here and saying at 31 we're saying Ryan Tannehill's our future? Okay, at 31 years old we're going to invest in him over the next 4 or 5 years. We think he's got the ability to play at a high level at 36 or 37 years of age. Whether you like Tom Brady or you don't like Tom Brady, okay, and I know a lot of people in this town do not like Tom Brady, and I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan. He's not fallen off the map in terms of production.
Yeah, still 4,000 yards for the off year he just had.
If Edelman catches the ball in the playoff game against the Titans when he's wide open,
fair point.
The Titans might lose that game. I don't want to take anything away from what the Titans accomplished, but they're getting, I mean, you think they're getting ready to take a run. He didn't have anybody to throw with, to play with, in my opinion, in terms of his weapons. Mike Vrabel and Brady are huge friends. Now, does Vrabel want to coach him? Does Brady want to play for one of his best friends? That's a very different dynamic than what you've been through. I just think if you're the Tennessee Titans, are you going to have buyer's remorse if Tom Brady wants to come play for you and you think you can be a contender? Now, I don't think they can beat the Chiefs, but if you think you can be a contender, are you going to tell Tom Brady, nah, we're good? Now, did it work out for Kansas City when they took Joe Montana?
Yes. To a degree.
To a degree. They didn't win a championship. Yep, but
went to the playoffs.
They were pretty good there. Does Kansas City regret doing that with Joe Montana? I don't know. I mean, Joe Montana was clearly on the back end of his career when he went to Kansas City. I think we can all agree that Tom Brady's on the back end of his career wherever he heads. The question is, are you good enough on defense? Do you have enough around you that you can protect Tom Brady up front and he gives you a chance to make a run, to make a legitimate run? Was Tannehill's run lightning in a bottle, or is that who Ryan Tannehill is? The history of him says that's not who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hadn't been able to stay healthy, and he was a backup when he got to the Titans. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting proposition. To me, it's hard for the Titans to tell a Hall of Famer no.
It would be, and from Brady's perspective, in my opinion, I would take the Titans at running back, I'd take their two best receivers, and I would take their best tight end over what New England's got. So I think you're surrounded by a better offensive cast. So that would be enticing.
Who are your other options? Who are your other team options
Raiders.
That are realistic?
You got Raiders, Chargers have been thrown out there a lot. The Bucks show up, which imagine seeing them in a Tampa helmet.
You're not going to Tampa. I mean, look, if you're at this, unless he just wants to play in warm weather.
But you do have two awesome receivers work with in Tampa.
And you got
a couple good tight ends.
You got a head coach who'll throw it and do you know, pretty dynamic offensively. But I just think they're a long ways away, you know, to me. But I don't know. I mean, the Vrabel factor is the unknown.
Yeah, and that's a very, very valid point, and it's a good one. I just wonder if you're John Robinson and you get to a certain, perhaps, spot down the path, if indeed it is a full, honest, and ongoing free agent experience for Tom Brady, that you could wind up chasing him and lose out on both.
But if you're John Robinson, this is where you got to get in a room with Mike Vrabel, because you know Tom Brady and Mike Vrabel have had conversations because they're old friends. John Robinson can't talk to Tom Brady, but Tom Brady's talked to, if there's a head coach out there in the free agent market that Tom Brady's spoken with, one would assume and think that it's Mike Vrabel, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where you got to walk in the office with Mike Vrabel and say, look, I got to know, is this real or is it not real? Okay, if it's not real, then we got to get going. But if it's real, then you need to tell me right now what it is, because I know you've hung out with him, you've talked to him. So to me, the Titans have a little bit of an advantage there, because they should have an inside track into a little bit of what Tom Brady's thinking in regards to the Titans, because their head coach can have conversations with him that John Gruden can't, or, you know, whoever, Bruce Arians or whoever, cannot have with Tom Brady. The Titans should have some conversations that nobody else has been able to have, right?
You would think. That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by our good friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. You can view their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter and you don't. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
If you have a question or comment for Brent Hubbs, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's check in with Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey, Brent, talking about recruiting for next recruiting season, what kind of year is it in North Carolina? the way it looks, and also the commitments that we have, if they were all to stick with us, would that be a real good type of start for the recruiting year?
I think it's a terrific year in North Carolina. I really do. I think North Carolina is always good. I think Tennessee should always be heavily involved in North Carolina because so many of those kids leave the state. But I think it's a really good year in North Carolina. There's really all positions available over there. You know, you've got the May kid at quarterback who's committed to Alabama that Tennessee still trying to have some conversations with. There's a running back in Durham, North Carolina, who's a guy that I think we'll visit pretty soon. There's a couple of defensive linemen over there, a couple of outside edge guys. I mean, I just think it's deep. I mean, I think Tennessee could have as many as a half dozen kids in here next weekend from North Carolina. I just think it's a good year, and I think Jay Graham's return is good for Tennessee. I think you've got Brian Niedermeyer, who's had another year over there to establish himself in Charlotte. Winkie's involved over there, so I think Tennessee's going to do all they can to make hay. It's not a, I don't want to say it's a better year in North Carolina than it is in Georgia, because that's not fair. I think Tennessee's more involved in more players in North Carolina right now than they probably are across the board in the state of Georgia. I just think that's just the way this year's fallen. So I think it's a really good year.
You think Mac Brown will make it harder to get kids out of North Carolina?
You know, it's a good question, Jimmy. I think Mac's success last year with Sam Howell and mm-hmm. what they did is attractive, and I think that will help them in recruiting. I still think you're dealing with Clemson as a big threat. But I don't think Mac's going to be able to lock that state down. He couldn't lock that state down when he was there as a young hotshot recruiter the first go around. So I think they'll recruit solidly in North Carolina, but I don't think he's going to be able to lock a bunch of guys down and win in there. I still think you got to worry about Clemson as a big threat. Virginia Tech's trying to make a lot of hay in North Carolina coming down in there. But again, if you're Tennessee, do you want to battle North Carolina, Duke, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Virginia, Clemson coming up for some of those kids? Or do you want to go to South Georgia and battle Florida State, Auburn, Clemson, Georgia, Florida, you know, Alabama? I think there's a little bit of an easier path to some success in North Carolina, which is why I've always believed Tennessee should have never gotten out of that state. I think you should have always been recruiting in that state. Too many good players have left the state of North Carolina through the years. It's been a consistent, you go all the way back for years. I mean, and I'm not just talking about Tennessee, but I mean, you go back to DJ Humphreys was a top 20 player nationally. He goes to Florida. We all know what Steve Shipp, he went to Florida, North Carolina guy. There have been guys from North Carolina leaving that state every year. I mean, you look at it, I would venture to say 50% or better of the top 10 players in that state have left that state historically. And when I mean historically, I mean by the last 10, 15 years. I think over half of the top 10 in that state have left to go to other schools. Running backs going to Georgia. Kids going to Clemson, South Carolina. It's just, I mean, Tennessee not being involved over there, you know, with Derek Dooley and Butch Jones, that was a shame. I mean, I think Tennessee missed a golden opportunity to recruit some good players over there, and I think you're seeing this staff try to get heavier back involved. As to your second part of your question, Steve, I think it's too early to say. You know, I mean, look, I like Jordan Mosley, the wide receiver they've got committed from down in Mobile, Alabama. I think he's a good player. I think Daryl Jackson's a good athlete. I don't know where his game's going to end up being, you know, when it's all said and done. So I would be a little bit surprised if that one sticks. I really like Elijah Howard. So, I mean, I think when you look at what they have, it's a decent start. But obviously, you know, it's a very much small sample size, you know, starting point for this class.
Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Now, I'm serious. It's not just because you said what you said about North Carolina, Brent, but that is my favorite state other than the state of Tennessee to recruit in and has been for a long, long time. I started having ways to keep up the recruiting when Carl Pickens played in North Carolina. I remember that well. And, yeah, I love recruiting in the state of North Carolina. And you're right, we should have been involved under some other coaches, too.
Well, I just think, you've got a history of success there. I mean, so why not continue to be continue to be involved in that state,
right.
I mean, I'm looking at and look, last year North Carolina had a good year in state. I'm looking at the top 10 for the state of North Carolina last year. Top player in the state went to Clemson. Second, third, fourth go to North Carolina.
Right.
Clemson gets the fifth ranked player. Ohio State the sixth, Texas A&M the seventh. Jay Graham got him, by the way. Porter Rooks was eight. He went to North Carolina State, and then North Carolina closed out with the last two. So, to your point, Jimmy, last year the in-state school did better than they've ever done, probably better than, I shouldn't say ever, better than they've done the last decade and a half in terms of keeping guys in state. So, yeah, it's a little bit more of a battle with Mack Brown and the fact that he's had success. But I still think those guys are open and willing to go and look around. I mean, this year you've got Peyton Page, who's the number one player in the state. Tennessee's involved there. Kaheem Marley is one of the top five players in the state. He's out of Ramshire, North Carolina. Tennessee's involved in that one pretty heavily. I mentioned Drake May. He's already committed to Alabama. Tennessee's still trying there. Javari Ritzy is a kid out of Kernersville, North Carolina, that Tennessee's involved in the top 10. The Dillsworth kid, who's an outside linebacker out of Kernersville, he's outside the top 10. I think he'll be in the top 10 before it's all said and done. I just think when you look at the state, there's good players this year. Isaac Washington was committed. He's decommitted. I think Tennessee can get back in on that one. There's Zun Reeves, who is a kid from the state over there that Tennessee's involved with. Tennessee's got their footprint in it. The question is, can they close down?
Well, okay. And the saga continues, doesn't it, on that Evans kid, visiting Florida, possibly or somebody like that. Of course, that's been the word for a few weeks now. We knew all that. We'll see how that goes, too. But I'm hoping if he don't go to Tennessee, if we stay on him, if he don't go to Tennessee, I hope he goes to Ole Miss. I mean, I'd rather, I think we all agree that we'd rather see him play in the other division instead of having to play him every year at Florida. So, anyway. Well, okay. Well, Brent, you still amaze me.
I appreciate it, Steve. It's good to hear from you, bud.
We'll get a break and be back with more. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. More with Brent Hubbs as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1. Hold on a second before I throw the break. Why don't we go ahead and just quickly say that we're going to take a qualifier right here, right now, for the Coors Light Climb to a Championship. Caller number 5 at 656-WINS, 656-9467. It's not long before we'll have the grand prize drawing. The grand prize winner will be on their way to Nashville for the men's tournament upcoming March 11th through the 15th with two all-game passes along with $500 spending money. And all you have to do is be caller number 5 right now, and you'll be in the drawing. 656-9467, 656-WINS for the Coors Light Climb to a Championship. Now we get a break and say stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Congratulations to Don, our qualifier for the Coors Light Climb to a Championship. Again, you'll have other opportunities to get qualified. In fact, Jimmy, tomorrow will be at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue, and folks can come by and register there.
Yes, and we're going to announce our winner soon.
That's right.
So it's a great prize, tickets to go watch the SEC basketball tournament if you like hoops. I think you're going to see a lot of good close games. There's not a whole lot of separation between these teams in the SEC.
Yeah, March 6th is when we give away that grand prize. So your next opportunity to call in or hear the cue to call will be tomorrow morning during the starting lineup from 6 until 9 with Tyler Ivins, Will West, and Eric Kane. Our guest, Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by our good friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. It's Wyatt who joins us next. Hello, Wyatt.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. Somebody was asking about, could they have been firing some of the defensive guys because they were, you know, just trying to get better recruiters? And the thought was hitting me, since Ainsley's the only one that's still there from last year, although they didn't move Niedermeyer over, could be possible that when Pruitt hired Ainsley, he either said, you know, you can build your own staff. I've got some people that are here through, you know, this last year. You can put who you want to put your stamp on it. Or since he's a defensive guy himself anyway, he could have, when Ainsley came in, and he didn't get along with a couple of the coaches, and with some of them leaving for, you know, other, you know, the pros or whatever, but he could have just said, maybe he and Rucker just didn't hit it off with each other somehow, and there was some sort of, you know, conflict. If you and your boss don't get along, a lot of times you're out, you know, because the boss stays. Could that be possibly why there was so much turnover in the defensive side, was that, you know, they didn't like his way of doing things or something?
No, I mean, I don't think there was personality conflicts. I don't think it was anything like that. Rocker was on a contract that did not get extended a year ago before Ainsley was even hired. And I think that was a situation where Jeremy Pruitt was ready to move on. And I think that's why Tracy Rocker, you know, ended up looking for other jobs. He interviewed at Vanderbilt. The money wasn't right. And then the South Carolina opportunity kind of came out of the blue. Chris Rump's always moved around. I don't think that's any surprise that he was looking to move and has had thoughts of going to the NFL, wanted to go to the NFL, and the opportunity presented itself there. I do think the hiring of Jimmy Brumbaugh, that's got Derek Ansley's hand placement on it quite a bit. Not that Jeremy Pruitt didn't know who he was, because he did, but remember, Ansley and Brumbaugh worked together at Kentucky for 3 years. And I think when you have a defensive coordinator who's a back-end guy, then he's got to really trust his front-end guy because they're tying that together. And if they can't tie it together right, it's not going to be very effective. So I think there was a real trust factor that Derek Ansley had with Jimmy Brumbaugh. I'm not saying that Derek Ansley demanded that Brumbaugh was the only guy they hired, because there was other guys that I think Tennessee had some interest in that maybe decided to stay in the NFL, or it wasn't, the timing wasn't right or whatever. But I do think when they sat down and talked and decided to go with Jimmy Brumbaugh, I think one of the things that was attractive was the familiarity that Derek Ansley had with Jimmy Brumbaugh, because they had worked together in this conference. And I think that's an important thing. I don't think Derek Ansley had any idea who Shelton Felton was. He was with the Oakland Raiders. Ansley was when Shelton Felton was moving from Chattanooga to Tennessee. So I think that was a Jeremy Pruitt, you know, type deal. And obviously Ansley was approved of that, but I don't think that was any kind of demands that Derek Ansley made to make any kind of hire that way.
And do you think Cher was looking to move because he got demoted from co-defensive coordinator to special teams?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he probably felt like he wanted to get ahead of the contract. He was getting ready to go into the last year of a contract. Was he going to get another year? He had been demoted. He knew that his salary was out of whack for a non-titled position. I mean, he was making co-defensive coordinator money, but he wasn't the co-defensive coordinator. He wasn't involved in the coordinator deal. So I think that's a reason why, you know, he was looking there, and the NFL opportunity came about for him. I think he would have been fine with coming back. He wasn't miserable here, but I think he was keeping his options open because he didn't know, you know, kind of what his long-term future was going to be on the staff here.
And so could some of those guys have had any kind of not so much a run-in as he didn't, maybe Pruitt didn't feel like they fit the system, because you're saying like one of them was already knew he wasn't going to get extended, and Pruitt's heavy in on the defense. Could just they weren't meshing in right with the way they wanted to get things done or something?
Well, I mean, I think a large part of it was recruiting. Okay. And here's the thing that you know, Wyatt and everybody out there has got to understand. This is not abnormal. Okay. I mean, staff turnover is not abnormal, particularly in what is perceived to be the Nick Saban tree, if you will. I mean, it's Coach Majors had it here, Jimmy, when he was here in the 90s. New blood coming in all the time. Three or four guys turning over, two or three guys was not out of the realm. That doesn't mean that there's, you know, some great behind-the-scenes issue. It was just, you know, it was time for Coach Majors to get some new blood in. He wanted to move things around. The exception a little bit was Philip Fulmer, because he did not make many moves when he was the head coach here. He had great staff continuity for a long period of time. Dabo Swinney has had that. Those are kind of the exceptions to the rule. I think it's more likely that you're seeing and going to continue to see three or four positions, two or three, 2 to 4 positions, whatever, turnover every year, every couple of years at high profile schools for a couple of reasons. One, the price for assistant coaches is going up every year. Okay, guys are making more and more money. Assistant coaches in some places are getting 3-year deals. Okay. And they're staying in front of the curve. Okay, let's go get the next deal. Let's go get this. You know, I want to move up the ranks. What gives me a chance to move up the ranks? So you're seeing guys move around more than you used to, and I think you're going to see that trend continue. A little bit less loyalty, if you will, on both ends, assistant coach and the head coach standpoint, because I think guys are more comfortable with moving around, because I don't think moving around is perceived as a bad thing as it once was. You know, I don't think from a head coach's standpoint, staff turnover is not perceived as a bad thing the way I think it, you know, might have been perceived a little bit as, uh-oh, they got problems on that staff if you were making moves in the early 2000s. That's not the thought process out there now, at least from my vantage point.
Along those lines, were you surprised Scott Cochran finally left Alabama to go to Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, I was. I knew that he and Kirby Smart were good friends. And you'd heard rumblings that he wanted to be an on-field position coach. I didn't know how bad he wanted to be an on-field position coach, because the way I look at where he's at right now, I don't want to say he took a pay cut, but it was clearly from a financial standpoint lateral at best, because he was getting some off-the-field money at Alabama doing commercials and different things like that. But clearly he wants to be a coach, and I think guys get that itch sometimes that they want to be a coach. And I think Nick Saban made it very clear he was not going to put him on staff. He was not going to be an on the field coach for him. Does it weaken Alabama? You know, I mean, I'm sure it has an effect on Alabama. Is there reign over down there because he's gone? I don't believe that. I believe they'll hire a good strength coach, and I think Nick Saban's firmly in control, and I think they'll continue to win. How good of a coach is he? I have no idea. How good of a recruiter is he going to be? Jimmy, I don't have any idea. Could be really good for Kirby Smart, or could be just kind of okay. I do find it interesting that Nick Saban wouldn't put him on staff, which makes me wonder where Nick Saban thought he was X's and O's wise, and what kind of a recruiter he thought he would be on the road. For as many staff changes as he's had to not make room for him, I think is a bit interesting that he would not go down that road. And Scott Cochran has wanted to go down this road, I think, for the last couple of years.
That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number 3 of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. It sounds just as good on your car radio as it does while you're working. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number 3 of Sports Talk, a final segment with Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com. And let's get back to the phones where it's Tony who's up next. Hello, Tony.
Hello. Hey, gentlemen. Hey, Brent, quick question. I was just reading a CBS Sports article about Missouri's new coach. I think it's like Drinkowitz or something. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the article was like very positive. I mean, like great X's, no guy. I mean, really pumping him up. But, you know, I haven't even heard of the guy up until like a year ago. I'm just wondering, is that like media fluff or is it, I mean, is there some substance to that? I don't know. I think he was even Missouri's like third or fourth choice, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's typical. You know, it's kind of the notion that a coach never goes to the podium on signing day and says, you know, we didn't have a very good class, or we didn't close very well. We didn't do a very good job. Or we really don't like this group that we're bringing in, or you don't hear kids go to SEC media days and say, you know what, we were really lazy this summer. We just didn't put in much work in our off-season workout program. We kind of laid around and drank some milkshakes and ate ice cream, and, you know, that was it. So I think you always have a little bit, and this is coming from my own personal experience. I mean, this is something that I look at that through the years of all the change that I've done and covered at Tennessee. It's easy to get caught up in the newness and how cool the new is. You know what I mean? Here's a new guy. Nope. He's not Barry Odom, which means he's better because he's Missouri's new guy. Okay? I do think he has a good reputation of being an X's and O's guy, and I don't think there's a doubt about that or a question about that. Here's my question with him, with Coach Drinkwitz, is I don't know if he can build a roster. Okay, he was an assistant, you know, obviously, I guess at NC State, and then he ends up getting the Appalachian State job. He did a nice job with Appalachian State this past year. He really did. But if Scott Satterfield had stayed at Appalachian State, Scott Satterfield might have got the Florida State job coming out of Appy State instead of Louisville. Okay? Because Appalachian State was set up to win. Scott Satterfield, who I think is a good coach, had really built a nice roster there. So Drinkwitz inherits a really good team in that conference. I mean, they were built to win. They were a top 25 caliber team that he inherited. He coaches them 1 year, and then all of a sudden he moves on to the SEC. So I don't know how well he can recruit as a head coach because we haven't seen it yet. I don't know how well he can roster manage because we haven't seen it yet. So those are some of my questions with him. I do think he's a smart guy from an X's and O's standpoint. He has a good reputation out there of that. It's just he's unproven to me, Jimmy, from a program management standpoint, because I think you got to put a big qualifier on the Appalachian State season, because I think he inherited a really good football team that was going to win regardless of who was there.
It's a little bit different, but I remember Larry Coker inheriting the Miami mm-hmm. roster left by Butch Davis, and the first 2 years he was a national championship winner, contender, and then they fell off the map.
Yep.
It gets back to what you were saying. He couldn't put together the right roster.
Yeah, and he may be able to put together a good roster at Missouri.
But we don't know that.
That's my question about him. In terms of positive stuff being written about him and X's and O's, I think he's a good mind. I mean, I think he's got a good offensive mind. I think he does some creative things, and I understand some of the excitement there. We'll see if he can recruit at this level and if he can build a roster at this level. Because, again, I really liked that Appalachian State team last year. I don't know if you saw them play.
They were good.
They were a good football team. They could have beat some teams in the SEC, okay? They could have competed well with a lot of teams in the SEC. They were a top 25 caliber football team. And, again, I was surprised Satterfield took the Louisville job, because I really thought if he waited one more year, he could have maybe gotten an even better job. Now, that's not to say the Louisville job's a bad job, but there might have been some other stuff that could have come open for him that might have been a little better fit, or it might have been an easier job, if you will, than the Louisville job was. And Scott did a nice job at Louisville this year, you know, with what he inherited. I mean, that was a mess, and he's cleaning up a mess. He did not do a bad job with that team.
Okay, yeah, appreciate your guys' insight. Thanks.
Tony, thank you very much. Let's work in a quick call from Roger. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Roger.
Hey guys, y'all doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Brent, I just want to ask you a question real quick. I just want to ask you first is football, UT football. That's why I ask you this coming year. Brent, I know that expectations should be probably high. I just want to ask you, for talent wise, I know Tennessee last year, like against Florida and Georgia, that compete well. You didn't compete too well with Florida or Georgia last year. I just want to ask you that this year, you might know better if you know or not yet, but for talent wise, this year football, Tennessee football, you think Tennessee have enough talent this year to compete with Florida and Georgia this year, as far as and SC wise, if you know or not yet, but might be hard to know yet. But right now you know yet, but Tennessee have enough talent yet.
Well, I mean,
Florida Georgia this year, you know yet.
I mean, I think anytime you're bringing back everybody on the line of scrimmage, then you've got a chance to be, to be competitive in this league. Now, I'm not going to pick Tennessee to beat Florida again until they beat Florida, okay? And they were uncompetitive in that game last year. But I think that was a turning point for that team coming out of that game. I think Georgia's going to be fascinating to watch, because what are they going to be at quarterback? You know, how productive are they going to be? I like some of their skill guys that they have on offense. They lost quite a bit on the offensive line, but they were deep there. Coach Munkin coming in, I don't think James Cooley was a good fit for them, or Coley was a good fit for them. I think Munkin is a better hire. I think Kirby Smart got a mulligan on his offensive coordinator deal. Made a bad choice in promoting, and then he leaves, and they bring in Munkin. I think that's an upgrade for them. But what's that transition going to be like for Georgia? Of course, that game's later in the year for Tennessee and Georgia. You know, to see that development of that offense is going to be an interesting. I think they got a lot of young players on defense. I think Georgia's going to be pretty good.
If their quarterback comes through.
If the quarterback play is good. Now, you know, it's interesting. This the quarterback play in the SEC, everybody's talking about the two transfers being the two best players potentially in the league.
If they are, that's not good for this league.
You maybe have Jamie Newman at Georgia and Costello at Mississippi State yeah. as the two most productive players in the league at the quarterback position, with Kellen Mond maybe being the third guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Contrast fourth. I've seen that too.
Yeah, I've seen that deal too. Yeah. I've seen Felipe Franks coming off a major injury in a new system as high as like sixth. So I don't think it's a great year for quarterback. If Georgia can get quarterback play, then I think Georgia's got a chance to be really good. I do think Tennessee, talent-wise, should be more competitive because it's going to start with where you are in the line of scrimmage, and Tennessee should be solid in both lines because they're bringing everybody back.
What's going on these days at VolQuest.com?
Well, we got the War Room tomorrow. We got the podcast tomorrow. We got a preview of baseball for the weekend. We'll get you ready for Tennessee basketball. More recruiting stuff, more recruiting updates, more on who's coming in the next couple of weeks. We dive into all that. We talk a little bit about quarterback play at the SEC in our podcast tomorrow, among some other topics out there as well. So that's coming up tomorrow, and plenty of coverage and plenty of discussion at VolQuest.
That's all at VolQuest.com. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Brent, we always appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Coming up, a final half hour to today's edition of Sports Talk, and it starts with your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6.